seated, brethren. Our first sermon this morning will be given by Mr. Tom Colarossi.
Thank you, Mr. Hall. I've been reading the Bible, like most of you, for a lot of years now. And what I find kind of exciting and interesting is that God still drops little gems of wisdom to me, or reveals little gems of wisdom to me, at the most unexpected times. I mean, it usually is when I'm going through maybe a trial, or I've been dwelling on things, and things I've read a thousand times before, they just pop up, and I see it in a different way, and I see, you know, it just reveals these nice pearls of wisdom. But one that I can remember happening occurred when I was at Ambassador College back in 1985. I was sitting in an Epistles of Paul class, and we were going through the book of Hebrews. And so let's turn back to the book of Hebrews, Hebrews chapter 10, and in verse 37. For yet a little while, and he will come, for yet a little while, and he who is coming will come and will not tarry. And in verse 38, now the just shall live by faith. That's a pretty famous expression. We hear that all the time. But the surprising little gem of wisdom that I found out back then in 1985 was that Paul did not generate or did not come up with that expression. It is a quote. And in fact, he quoted it three times. There, Galatians, and I think he did once in Romans. And it turns out that it is a quote, a direct quote, from the book of Habakkuk. How many of you can spell Habakkuk, let alone where you know where it is? The book of Habakkuk is probably the, I don't know any statistics, but it's probably the least, one of the least read books, let alone one of the least quoted books during a sermon and sermonette. But what I found surprising was, when I found out that this was a direct quote from the book of Habakkuk, I decided, I'm going to find out what Paul's quoting here. So I went back and studied the book. And I come to find out that this little book is extremely profound. It has a very deep message to it. So today I'd like to invite you to turn back to the book of Habakkuk. And for those of you who don't know, I can tell the joke and say it's on page 646, but that joke is old. But anyway, it is between Nahum and Zephaniah, if you know where those are. Now, first of all, before we jump into it, who was Habakkuk? You know the answer is? We don't know. All we know is he's the 8th of 12 minor prophets. And some say that he prophesied around the time of 600 BC, right about the fall of Judea. Then there's also another Jewish tradition that said that he prophesied 250 years before that, at around 850 BC. And the Jewish tradition also states, and this tradition I do particularly like, it states that he was the son of the Shunammite woman. I don't know if you all remember the Shunammite woman, but she's a very, to me, she's a very passionate character in the Bible. She was a lady in 1 Kings 4, didn't want a child, and Elisha, out of the goodness of heart, said, next year you'll have a son. Voila, there comes Habakkuk. But then later on, he dies. And then she said, hey, I told you, let's leave me alone. I was happy. But she dies, and that's where Elisha comes back in and lays on the son. The whole story is counted in 1 Kings 4. But I like that. I like this example. I more agree with that than I do with the 600 BC. And I do that for a number of reasons. One of which is it puts some character to the individual. It puts some life into him. And I love that story. So, what about the book? The book is basically broken up into three sections. And what makes the book unique is that it is a question and answer book. It's a series of questions and answers between Habakkuk and God. And what even makes that debate or the discussion even more unique is Habakkuk is actually openly questioning God and why he's doing what he's doing. And though the book of Habakkuk, and we'll read this, though its main one of its the most obvious theme is concerning the Chaldeans or the Babylonians and God's use of them as a tool of punishment for Judah, that, in my estimation, is not the main theme of the book. There is an underlying theme here that goes far beyond God talking about the Babylonians or Chaldeans, being used as a tool of correction. So let's start and turn to the book of Habakkuk. Habakkuk 1. And what we're going to do is we'll start with Habakkuk 1 and the first question. O Lord, how long shall I cry and you not hear? Even cry out to you violence and you shall not save. Why do you show me iniquity and cause me to see trouble? For the plundering and violence are before me. There is strife and contention arises. Therefore the law is powerless and justice never goes forth. For the wicked surrounded the righteous, therefore perverse judgment proceeds. Do you know what? You know what he's asking? What he's asking is, God, are you even there? Are you paying attention? Do you see what's going on? We ask that question all the time. Now, don't we? One I mentioned last week. Why do good things happen to bad people? That is exactly what Habakkuk was asking. And you know, this question is littered throughout the entire Bible. David asked that question. Let's keep your finger in the book of Habakkuk because we're coming back there. Let's go to Psalm 73 and verse 13. Surely, this is David talking. Surely I have cleansed my heart in vain and washed my hands in incense. For all day long I have been plagued and chastised every morning. And then, he's wondering. David is asking the question, why do I even bother doing this? Because it's painful. Job asked the question in Job 7. Job 7. And in verse 20. Job 7 and verse 20. Have I sinned? What have I done to you, O watcher of men? Why have you set me as your target? So that I'm a burden to myself. Why then do you not pardon my transgressions and take away my iniquities? For now I will lie down in the dust, and you shall see my you will seek me diligently, but I will no longer be. So, yeah, Job, with all of his trials, was wondering, where are you, God? I mean, I remember a case with my brother back in the early 90s. The job market for engineers was not that good. He went without a job for 18 months. 18 months. Many people, unfortunately, didn't see what was going on. I was there. I lived with him. They thought, you know, Paul, you need to work on your resume skills. Your interviewing skills must be terrible. But the truth of the matter, that wasn't the case. He turned down 12, count them, 12 jobs because of the Sabbath and the holy days. And he wrestled with the Lord, wondering, God, what on earth are you doing? Do you even care? But God does respond. God does respond. So let's go back to the book of Habakkuk and see what God says. And God says in verse 5, "Look among the nations and watch, and you will be utterly astounded, for I will work a work in your days which you will not believe, though it were told you." How many times has that happened? You know, the first one that came to mind of this story, of this work, that even if we were told it, we wouldn't have believed it. How about the last election? We all went to bed knowing that Hillary Clinton was going to be our next president, didn't we? And sometime around midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, when all the votes came in, guess who it was? I remember getting up the next morning, 5:30, and Tracy was the one who told me, Trump won. No way. Even if he had told me the night before he was going to win, I definitely, would not have believed it. But in the context of the book, this is where I'm going to go back to Habakkuk and when he actually prophesied. In the context of the book, he's preaching down, and we're going to jump down to, let's read verse 6. Actually, verse 6. "For indeed, I am rising up the Chaldeans, a bitter and hasty nation, which marches through the breadth of the earth to possess dwelling things that are not theirs. They are terrible and dreadful. Their judgment and their dignity proceed before them." Now, if he was actually prophesying around 600 BC, Babylon was already a powerhouse. They were already invading all the countries around him, and Judah was just next on their list. And if you said, at that time, the Babylonians are going to take over Judah, would you believe it? I would have. Go 250 years prior to that, when they were just a little rinky-dink country. And if somebody told you, Babylon is going to overtake Judah, would you have believed it? It would be kind of like saying, the country of Belgium is going to invade and take over the United States of America. Got this little rinky-dink country, no power whatsoever. Let's move on to the next question. Oh, but the point here, God is answering. The answer to his first question is, he is trying to let him know that, yes, I have a handle on everything. You don't think I don't see? But that's what he was saying in verse 1. I see everything, and I have a handle on everything. And so ultimately, this first question comes back down to a question of faith. Habakkuk in that particular, at that particular moment, was having a crisis of faith. Now, question 2. Which is actually very, very similar to question 1. And that takes place in verse 12. Habakkuk 1, verse 12. It says, "Are you not from everlasting, O Lord, my God, my Holy One? We shall not die, O Lord. You have appointed them for judgment." Talking about Babylonians or Chaldeans. "O rock, you have marked them for correction. You are of purer eye than to behold evil and cannot look on wickedness. Why do you look on those who deal treacherously and hold your tongue when the wicked devours a person more righteous than he?" And then he continues on. But what Habakkuk is actually asking God is, okay, I get it, Judah needs punishment and correction, but why are you using a country worse than Judah as your tool of judgment? They are worse than Judah. Again, he is asking the same question over again in a slightly different way. God, what are you doing? You know, I had a case like that back in 2006. Tracy and I needed to move. We had a rinky-dink house. We had three children. I had a guaranteed job out here. Just like that, the job went away. I can tell you, I found out, I got the rejection letter, actually, the day Garrett was born. It was horribly depressing. And I tell you, I asked God the same question. What are you doing? I don't get it. So what is this second question? The second question is very, very similar to the first. What are you doing, God? And it was a question that was based on a crisis of faith. But God answers him, and this is where the key in the whole book is. God answers him in verse 2 of chapter 2. Then the Lord answered me and said, now write the vision and make it plain on tablets that he may run who reads it. For the vision is yet for an appointed time. But at the end of it, it will speak, and it will not lie. Though it tarries, wait for it, because it will surely come. It will not tarry. He tells them, hang on, hold on, it's coming. I've got a handle on it. And you know, the interesting thing is that those statements there, it's a major theme that runs through the entire Bible. Let's jump over to Psalm 37. Psalm 37. And in verse 7. Rest in the Lord and wait patiently for him. Do not fret because of him who prospers in his way, because of the man who brings wicked schemes to pass. Cease from anger and forsake wrath. Do not fret. It only causes harm. But I can tell you, going through the whole scripture, he constantly says, wait. Hang on. I've got it. And then becomes the very famous quote. The very famous quote. In verse 4. Habakkuk 2 and verse 4. Behold the proud, his soul is not upright in him, but the just shall live by faith. And you know, he continually goes on, and God continues on after that, and he discusses the Chaldeans and the unrighteous. What verse do I want to read? How about verse 16? Oh, here we go. Let's read verse 12. God continues on after the just shall live by faith, talking about the evil of Judah and Chaldeans, more importantly the Chaldeans, but in verse 12. Woe to them who builds a town with bloodshed, who establishes a city in iniquity. And in verse 13, behold, is it not the Lord of hosts? The peoples labor to feed fire, and the nations, you know, weary themselves in vain. For, and then we've got that famous one that we're also very familiar with in verse 14. For the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. And he continues down in there, a couple other woes of the evil Chaldeans. And he ends that section in verse 18, where God actually reemphasizes the fact that I'm in charge. What profit is the image, in verse 18, that its maker should carve it? The molded image, a teacher of lives, the maker of it, its molded, should trust in it to make mute idols. Woe to him who says into the wood, awake. To silent stone, arise, it shall teach. Behold, it is overlaid with gold and silver, yet it is there, it's no breath at all. But
The Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silent before him.
Now, the interesting comment, or the interesting thing is the last section of the book. The last section of the book is actually a prayer into him. And in many regards, I kind of think of it as a parallel to the book of Job. Because you know what? What did Job say right at the end of the book in Job 42 and verse 5? He says, "Now I see you." Yeah, he says, "I have heard you with the hearing of the ears. Now I see you with my eyes." Habakkuk was actually the exact same goal. But during the prayer, he kind of repeats. He goes through and he repeats exactly what God says in a slightly different way than what God said in the woe section. But in verse 12 of chapter 3, "You march through the land in indignation. You trample the nations in anger. You went forth for the salvation of your people. For salvation with your anointed, you struck the head of the house of the wicked, and by laying bare the foundations of the neck," or of their neck. And you know what? You can actually say, no one gets away scot-free. And that's the truth. God will punish the wicked no matter who they are, no matter what happens. Habakkuk here at the end gets it. And in verse 17 through 19, to me, this is how I say, this is where Habakkuk finally goes, oh yeah, he has that old boy moment. And in verse 17, "Though the fig tree may not blossom, nor fruit on the vine, though the labor of the olive may fail, and the fields yield no food, though the flock may be cut off from the fold, and there be no herd in the stalls, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will joy in the God of my salvation." He identifies with God and who he is. It's a very personal. He is my God. The Lord is my strength, and he will make my feet like deer's feet. And he will make me walk on my high heels. And there it is. He's acting a couple God. He has a couple crisis questions of faith. And then he finally gets the old boy moment. And the old boy moment is this. No matter what the condition is going, no matter what condition is going on, as he mentions, no food, illness, no job, I don't care. Whatever the situation, no matter how bad things can be, trust in the Lord. So, what's the conclusion? What's the takeaway? It's not for us to understand God's will, because that's his job. It's not for us to be in control, because that too is God's job. Our job is to trust in him no matter the condition.